From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. A rally by armed white supremacist Trump supporters in Portland, Oregon on Saturday was a site of violence after police lobbed flashbang grenades and tear gas at the counter-protesters that had gathered there. About 400 or so members of the hate group's Patriot Prayer and Proud Boys gathered in Portland. They were outnumbered by about 1,000 counter-protesters. Police, who have come under strong criticism for their one-sided actions in favor of the white supremacists, arrested 4 people. Several anti-fascist activists were injured. The rally was held just days before the first anniversary of the white supremacist takeover of Charlottesville, Virginia, where Heather Heyer was killed by one of the right-wing protesters. Well, my guest is Arun Gupta, an investigative journalist who has written for dozens of publications, including The Washington Post, The Guardian, The Nation, Salon, and Raw Story. He's the author of the forthcoming book, Bacon as a Weapon of Mass Destruction, and a regular news correspondent for Rising Up with Sonali. He was at the Portland rally on Saturday. Welcome back to the show, Arun.
Thanks for having me on today, Sonali.
So in watching what was happening through these various videos that have emerged, I recall the interview that you and I had just about a year ago, where you shared how the police in Charlottesville ended up being more aggressive toward the counter-protesters than the actual white supremacist fascist groups. It looks like a similar sentiment was on display in Portland. Give us a sense of what happened first, just broadly speaking. In Portland, these groups descended. People thought it was going to be another Charlottesville. Although no one died, several people were injured, right?
Yes, that is true. So the important background for this is Patriot Prayer, which is just this very vague group based in Vancouver, Washington. That is across the Columbia River from Portland, Oregon. So it's in a different state, just about 20 minutes away. It's just this collection, essentially, of right-wing lowlifes and street brawlers. But they have essentially been making Portland their target by having these free speech marches. And what they're doing is they're using the cover of free speech to try to provoke a response. And this is at least the ninth time they've come to Portland in the last year and a half. Almost always these free speech marches, you know, quote unquote, end in violence. Sometimes it's just a few fistfights. But what happened at the last one on June 30th was just open warfare, just this huge street brawl, because the Portland police took a very hands-off approach. And there were numerous journalists there, including ones who had been in Charlottesville, who said this is the worst fighting that they've seen. And there are videos of that where you have this group, the Proud Boys. They're Western chauvinists. They call for closed borders. One of their slogans is House Wives Matter. They're this kind of bizarre group founded by Gavin McInnes, who is a co-founder of Vice Media. So they have all this money behind them. And it's basically this fraternity of drunken white guys. They often come to the demonstrations spending the whole morning drinking. And they're there to commit violence. But they use the cover of free speech. And so they've been effectively able to carve out this space, because you have a very weak and cowardly mayor in Portland, Mayor Ted Wheeler. One of his senior aides admitted, I was sitting with him last year, he didn't know I was a reporter. He said that everyone in the mayor's office is, quote, scared, unquote, of the Portland police. You have, as in virtually every big city in this country, the police consider themselves the law. So they will do as they wish, which is including attacking peaceful protesters with all sorts of less lethal weaponry. So on June 30th, the Proud Boys were attacking people in the street. You can see videos where they're surrounding protesters, pummeling them, stomping them, using weapons on them. They sent 5 people to the hospital, including one with a skull fracture and brain hemorrhage. This time, as I've been investigating what the police did, the police have sent 5 people to the hospital to protect the fascists. They let the fascists march in the city, and a bunch of them broke off for a while and started randomly attacking people with all sorts of weapons, even though the Portland police had earlier on Friday made this big announcement how no weapons were going to be allowed in Portland parks because that's the actual law. You're not, and they listed all these weapons that were not going to be allowed. And then, and I spent hours among the far right, and people can see the videos on my homepage on Facebook, where I'm talking to all these white supremacists.
And all of this happening ahead of the Saturday rally, by the way. This is the sort of the stuff that went before.
Yeah. Now what I'm talking about was when I was actually at the Saturday rally, the police had said, oh, we're going to have weapon screening stations for everyone entering the park, the far right rally. There were no weapon screening stations. I saw all sorts of people with wooden batons, thick wooden poles, one guy with an axe handle, another with a can of bear spray, a chemical weapon, another with a knife. Hundreds of them had fighting gloves. They're essentially these thick gloves with weights in the knuckle, which are illegal. And the police said none of that was going to be allowed, and yet they allowed them to have all this stuff. And then when it came time for their little march, what the police did was unprovoked attack the counter demonstrators. And, you know, you have to understand, like, a lot of journalists would blanch at the language I'm using, but this is a problem of the moment we're in, that the kind of objective journalism cannot adequately convey what's going on. You know, I've spent a lot of time reporting on the far right, reporting on all sorts of social movements, and you start to get a pretty good idea of, you know, when people have, like, criminal backgrounds, the people with hard looks who have all sorts of tattoos, and not that we should demonize them, but there's a history of the right wing around the world, fascists in Germany during the Iran coup in 1954, all the fascist movements in Latin America, of using these criminal brawlers as tools of the right wing to cause street violence, to force people inside, to fill them with fear. And we are essentially seeing the same thing going on in Portland, Oregon.
So, Arun, I want to play for you and our audience a video that independent media outlet Unicorn Riot did of police attacking the counter protesters. So, you know, it's amazing as you're watching this, it's literally looks and sounds like a scene out of a war zone in one of the countries that the US bombs. Here is the scene from Portland, Oregon on Saturday.
Police are loading some rounds. Cops are loading some rounds into some less lethal weapons over there. Pan out for a second, if you can. Oh, okay. The police are firing tons of flashbangs into the crowd. They've only attacked the anti-racist protests. They haven't attacked the anti-immigrant group.
On the sidewalk, again.
So the police attacked the group, threw a bunch of flashbangs. Seemed like the group mostly held their line and has retreated. There's some projectiles getting thrown at the police now. The cops are just totally unloading on the anti-racists, ignoring. They basically charged unprovoked on the anti-racist side. The alt-right is basically on the other side of the street cheering this.
And bottles. The projectiles were thrown at officers near Southwest NATO Parkway in Southwest Columbia. All people in this area must immediately disperse. Failure to comply with this order may subject you to arrest or citation and may subject you to the use of riot control agents or impact weapons.
and you've been watching a short report from Unicorn Riot from Portland, Oregon on Saturday showing the police attacking counter-protesters with flashbang grenades. Several people were injured. And Arun Gupta, I want to ask you a little bit about the injuries. There was one person, I understand. We're going to put up an image, which just want to warn our audience is very graphic, so you might want to look away. But there was one person that was very severely injured on the back of his head, and only his helmet protected him, possibly saved his life. And there were several other people, including a person that you know intimately, who was also injured. Tell us a little bit about the injuries.
Yeah, so the Portland police listed all the weapons that they used. They used six types of less lethal weaponry. Again, a bit of important background is last year during another one of these Patriot Prayer rallies that happened days after a white supremacist who had been to a previous Patriot Prayer rally, Jeremy Christian, murdered two people on a train. The Portland police unleashed all sorts of less lethal weaponry on protesters. And the ACLU of Oregon said, to our knowledge, no police department in the United States uses these types of weapons more indiscriminately. So one of them is, they call it a distraction device. What it is it's an explosive. It's a flashbang grenade. It has gunpowder, a significant amount of gunpowder. It's an explosive. The manufacturer's specification has all sorts of warnings on it, say that it can injure or kill. That's apparently what hit this young man. And as you can see, it is in the back of his head. So he was shot in the back of his head. And I have all sorts of photos that I got from his loved ones close to him. And it shows the round actually puncturing this thick bicycle helmet. He and the trauma nurse at the hospital said if he hadn't been wearing that helmet, he would have been killed. He did have a concussion, apparently, because of this. And then my partner was also one of those also injured by a flashbang grenade. She's in her 50s, a former college professor. She was peacefully protesting. There are all sorts of videos showing that people were peacefully protesting. The Portland police claimed that objects were hurled at them. Not one bit of video has actually surfaced showing anything being hurled at them. What the videos do show is a sudden, unprovoked attack on people who are just standing there chanting peacefully. She was hit with a flashbang grenade that hit her in the chest and bounced and then exploded on her arm, causing severe third-degree burns. If it had been just a few inches up, she could have been seriously injured or killed. I also talked to a young man yesterday who was also hit by an impact device and required multiple impact devices and required seven stitches. I'm gathering information on other people who were also sent to the hospital. But I think one of the ironies is on June 30th, it was the fascists who sent five people to the hospital. This time, it's the police who protected the fascists who sent five people to the hospital.
I want to play another video of you that you did as part of your reporting, where you confronted the cops who were attempting to basically stop you from doing your job, and then didn't quite answer your questions about sending, about the injuries that they caused. Here is a video conducted by my guest Arun Gupta on Saturday in Portland, Oregon.
Yes. Chief Outlaw, can you tell me about the people who were hit by flashbang grenades? I'm just doing my job, sir.
Sir, you need to stay back.
So folks saw that, police using force with me because they don't want me to talk to the chief. Under what rights? Huh? I'm in a public space.
Because I don't want you getting close to the chief.
So you're preventing me from doing my job as a reporter, sure. From doing my First Amendment job. What's your name, sir? You're with the Sheriff's Department. What's your names? What are your names? How convenient. None of the sheriff's deputies have name tags on them. Arun Gupta, I got my badge. Where's yours? I don't need to show you. No, I got the First Amendment. That's the only badge I need. You know what the First Amendment says? Freedom of the press shall not be abridged. You're violating my First Amendment rights. Is that why you became a police officer? To send people to the hospital with less lethal weapons?
And that is a video taken by my guest Arun Gupta asking the cops if they became cops to send people to the hospital with non-lethal weapons. Arun, you were attempting to question the police chief in Portland, ironically named Chief Outlaw. Tell me a little bit about that.
Chief Daniel Outlaw. She's the new chief of police in Portland. She comes from Oakland, I believe. People have told me who know how the police work here that, you know, she's not really running the department ultimately, that the police are doing their own thing. And so she put out a statement yesterday claiming no one had been injured by police, which is absurd. You know, one of those injured by police include a local cameraman for a news station, and he put up photos of the injuries he received from police weapons that sent him seeking medical attention. So at that point, I knew that at least three people had been injured by police projectiles, including the flashbang grenades, including one of which was my partner. And so I'm attempting to just ask Chief Outlaw about this. As you can see, these kind of like just mammoth size sheriff's deputies are blocking my way.
They look like stormtroopers.
I mean, the one guy was huge. He had to be close to 7 feet tall. I often joke because, you know, I live in New York City that the New York Police Department has this facility 10 floors below its command bunker filled with bio tanks where they grow these massive cops that they bring out for left-wing demonstrations. And this is exactly what this type of guy is. And unfortunately, I had a little nagging injury that would have made an arrest particularly painful. But otherwise, I would have tried to go around him because, as I was saying to him, I am in a public space at just trying to ask questions, exercising my First Amendment rights for freedom of the press. And he keeps physically blocking my way, you know, as somehow me just trying to ask the chief of police about people who are nearly killed by their weapons is somehow illegal. And then she that day claims that no one was injured by police weapons. And then she suddenly changed her tune yesterday. It's just like, oh, we want to hear from people who were injured by police weapons. Well, who's going to trust the police who attacked them unprovoked, denied they were hurt when they almost killed people, and now we're saying, please report it to us so we can investigate it, which means so we can do a cover-up.
Now, Arun, the last time we had talked to you was a report from the Occupy ICE Portland encampment in front of an ICE detention center and an office. And at that point, you had said that the police was sort of holding back from interfering because this was federal property, and they were sort of, staying away from that from the camp encampment because it was outside their jurisdiction. Of course, that changed. Then they did, I understand, participate to dismantle the camp. So the Portland police sound like they're very much, even though they are in a nominally liberal city or city that has this reputation of being so liberal, are just as violent as LAPD, NYPD, Chicago police, etc.
Yeah, and you know, I for folks who know the history, Daryl Gates, who was the notorious LAPD chief of police in the 1980s and during the Rodney King riots, he would recruit, as Mike Davis put it, rednecks from the South to come be police in Los Angeles. So basically, you know, people who are coming from Klan culture. Portland, Oregon was one of the most extreme outposts of the Klan during their heyday in the 1920s. It was founded as an explicitly white supremacist state. It has a history being in the Pacific Northwest of white white nationalist, Aryan nations, Christian identity, neo-Nazi movements. There is a captain in the Portland Police Chief, one of the highest ranking officials, who was caught making a memorial to Nazis in a Portland park. You heard me right. A police captain in Portland was caught making a memorial to Nazis in a park, and he is still on the force. And so when you hear protesters chanting cops and Klan go hand in hand, that's not too far off the mark.
So,
and I think, if I may add, I think you actually bring up a really important point. The mayor did kind of hold the police, was able to hold the police on a leash during the Occupy ICE stuff. And now the police just went wild against protesters, many of whom were Occupy ICE. And this may have been a payback of sorts by the Portland police.
Now, the people who showed up, the Patriot Prayer, Proud Boys, groups don't like to be called Nazis. They did try to distance themselves from Jeremy Christian, the Portland stabber. And yet there were people posting photos of protesters who showed up with essentially Nazi tattoos. There were people wearing t-shirts saying Pinochet did nothing wrong. The Chilean dictator who has the blood of thousands of Chileans on his hands. Every indication you know, of the kinds of things that they wore, t-shirts they wore and their paraphernalia and their tattoos and their skin art seems to indicate that they are either like Nazis or sympathetic to Nazis or straight up Nazis. And yet many of them claim they are not, that it's just all a joke. They're just joking about Pinochet. How important is it for us to assert that, you know, a Nazi is a Nazi?
Yeah, if there's, so let me kind of come around from the side. I think there's like a really important debate exactly how to confront these fascists. And they are fascists. This is an ethno-nationalist movement meant to ethnically cleanse the United States and enforce these kind of strict gender and patriarchal roles. That's why the Proud Boys slogan of Housewives Matter is significant, right? This is something out of The Handmaid's Tale. They came armed for warfare. This is, and the thing is, I'm on the board of a civil liberties outfit, the Defending Rights and Dissent Foundation, and there is no need to restrict their freedom of speech, but the police and the city can do all sorts of stuff to proactively take action against them that they are not doing. There's a lot the city and police could have done to legally impede this demonstration that they should be doing, right? They know they come there to commit violence. They could do proactive searches. The minute their buses cross into the city of Portland, they can stop them. They can go on and do complete searches of them. They can also, there's laws about gang activity, paramilitary activity that they can start to enforce, but they are not enforcing. What you would need, though, is a civilian mayor who was willing to exert. The mayor in Portland is the police commissioner, but the mayor in Portland is a complete coward who is afraid of the police. So they are not willing to use the legal methods they have at their disposal to basically impede the violence. They don't have to actually shut down their First Amendment freedoms. That's very important to recognize. This is not an either or. They can actually shut them down, but are not choosing to do so.
So, Arun, it's a few days away from the first anniversary of the Charlottesville gathering of the so-called Unite the Right rally. And I understand that the same people or some of the same forces wanted to organize another rally on the one-year anniversary. And Charlottesville this time basically said, no, we're not going to allow it. And instead, Jason Kessler, one of the figures in these groups, has decided to and has sought the permission and gotten it to hold a white civil rights rally in Washington, D.C., in, near the White House. Does the fact that he was granted permission in D.C. indicate something about Trump's embrace of these groups and the relationship between these groups and Donald Trump? Or is that just, you know, a coincidence?
No, I think very much clearly. I think one of the important things is not to get over the top about this. David Neuwirth at the Southern Poverty Law Center has been tracking murders by Trump supporters and those in their orbit. You know, there's this one group, a neo-Nazi group called, I believe, Adam Waffen SS, that have been linked to 5 murders. There have been all these kind of lone wolf murders by Trump supporters, by incels, involuntary celibates. So they are dangerous. But the state, is what I keep telling people, the state is far more dangerous. We just saw them kidnap close to 3,000 children in about 1 month, and something like 700 of those children have been effectively disappeared. It's something out of the dirty wars in Latin America. So they are dangerous, but what we don't know is if this is something like Weimar Republic in 1921, where these brown shirts are just starting to gather steam as an organized force, and if some sort of severe economic and social crisis could cause their numbers to explode, and could where you could see far more of these people rampaging on the street. And a point, you know, that I think is really important to make, that it's not just these rallies. Like, a lot of liberals are like, oh, just stop paying them attention and they'll go away. First of all, there are all these murders, but also they are going around and basically assaulting people at other times. They are looking to commit violence. The rallies are just recruiting grounds to get more. And then they go out and they'll attack people of color. They'll attack LGBT queer people, LGBTQ people. They'll attack people they think are immigrants. So this type of low-level warfare. I think it's important not to blow it out of proportion, but there is a growing danger here, and we are actually seeing fascism on the march and growing in America. This is not an academic question anymore. It's small. It needs to be defeated through mass mobilization and intelligent organizing, but there is a real threat, and it is the white nationalist in the White House is dependent on the brown shirts in the street. And if he gets in trouble, he may really release the brown shirts.
Arun, I want to thank you as always for joining us today. I wish your partner a full recovery from the injuries she sustained. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Sonali. And there'll be an article about what happened to her in The Guardian today.
Thank you so much. And we link to that article from our website. My guest has been Arun Gupta, an investigative journalist who's written for dozens of publications, including The Washington Post, The Guardian, The Nation, Salon, and Raw Story. His forthcoming book is Bacon as a Weapon of Mass Destruction. He's our regular news correspondent and has been discussing the rally on Saturday in Portland, which he attended and documented. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and now Instagram at Are You With Sonali?